The Off-Kilter Quilt, Part 3. A week went by, and then two, without Melissa hearing a word from Jim Burke. Maybe he hadn't been able to tear himself away from his seminarian friend. Maybe they'd eloped to Mexico and would be gone for years. Unlikely, Melissa knew, but if Jim had eloped to North Africa and possession truly was 9/10 of the law, then she'd get to claim the off-kilter log cabin for her own. As she'd become more and more enamored of it, this idea made her happy, in spite of the strange ping of sadness she felt when she thought of Jim Burke eating couscous in Marrakesh with his lady pastor love. The longer she lived with the quilt, the stronger her affection for it grew. How would she live without it? There was only one thing to do, and that was to make a quilt just like it. Actually, she decided, she would make two. One for herself and one for Casey. She had wanted to do something for the girl, especially since it didn't look like she'd be able to find her a home. When had she decided that getting Casey a permanent address was the best thing she could do for the girl? Maybe it was the day Casey discovered the seed catalog in the library. A repurposed card catalog where patrons could leave packets of saved seeds and take home the ones they needed. It was too late in the summer for planting much besides fast-growing herbs, so Casey filled a small envelope with basil seeds and another with parsley and brought them to Melissa's desk. "I'll plant these by your tomatoes," the girl said, shaking the little packets so the seeds rattled inside. "I mean, if it's okay." "You can do anything you want back there," Melissa said. "Have at it." Casey's eyes lit up. "Anything?" "Just as long as it's not poisonous to cats."
"I would never poison a cat," Casey said solemnly. "I would poison a snake, but not a cat."
The next morning, she was in Melissa's backyard digging, and that afternoon, Melissa found her at a table in the periodical section reading gardening magazines, a pile of gardening books by her side. "This is a girl who needs a yard of her own," Melissa thought. "This is a girl who wants roots." But it didn't appear Casey would be setting down roots at Milton Falls Heights anytime soon. Not unless her mother got a decent paying job, according to Faye's nephew, Jordan. He'd come to quilting class the week before with the news that without steady income, the Rawlings wouldn't be eligible for even the smallest apartment in the new development. If Melissa couldn't find Casey a house, she could at least make her a quilt, which was her solution to most of life's unsolvable problems. And since Casey had said she'd liked Jim's log cabin quilt, Melissa set about copying it. She took photographs and drew a pattern on graph paper. Of course, in order to study the quilt, she needed to spread it out on a flat surface, and her bed was the cleanest flat surface she had. It seemed silly to pack it back up only to lay it out again the next day, so Melissa left it where it was. The first night she slept under the quilt, she dreamed she was beautiful. There was nothing about her appearance that had changed in her dream. When she looked in the mirror, her reflection was the same as always: straight reddish-brown hair tucked behind her ears, hazel eyes, freckles, pointed nose. But she realized for all those years she'd thought herself plain, she'd been mistaken. She was, in fact, strikingly pretty. Could it be? She walked out of her house and over to the library, which in her dream was right across the street, and sure enough, everyone looked at her and smiled. "Gorgeous," they whispered to one another. "What a stunning girl." She woke up giggling.
Two nights after that, she dreamed that the International Quilt Museum decided to have a special exhibit of her quilts, and all of the quilterati were at the opening reception. Kay Fassett, Amy Butler, Marianne and Mary Fonz, Bonnie Hunter, Alex Anderson, Victoria Finley Wolfe, ooing and awing over her creations. Other dreams came, some fantastical, some just exceedingly pleasant, and Melissa began to worry that now she would never be able to give the quilt back to Jim. Maybe she could buy it from him, or convince him to take the copy she was making for herself. Or maybe she could trade him one of her other quilts. There was her hand-pieced Lone Star that had won a blue ribbon at the Ohio State Fair, or her modern orange and white Dresden plate that had made it into the first quilt con. In practically no time at all, Casey had transformed her backyard. She'd hoed the weeds and mulched the beds, and the tomato plants began putting out new blooms almost immediately. She'd found rocks around the yard and made borders. The basil and parsley sprouted a few days after being planted, and Melissa was surprised by how much the tiny plants pleased her. She and Casey had fallen into a routine. Casey showed up every morning around 7:30 and headed straight for the backyard to work in the garden. At 8:15, she washed up and then met Melissa on the porch, where the two of them ate breakfast, usually English muffins with strawberry jam and two strips of bacon apiece. And they read until 8:45, when Melissa got ready for work. Casey had taken to doing the breakfast dishes and packing their lunches, and together they left the house at 9:20, arriving at the library 10 minutes later. Casey always left the library a few minutes before Melissa did, and Melissa suspected it was to avoid the embarrassment of not being asked to dinner. Melissa wondered if she should invite Casey to eat with her, but something always stopped her. It wasn't that she would mind the girl's company. It was just that, well, Casey had a mother, and it wasn't Melissa. Melissa didn't want there to be any confusion on that point. But now, on the nights that Melissa spent at home, nights without classes to teach or meetings to attend or friends to catch up with, the house felt oddly empty. It had never felt empty before. In fact, it had always verged on being overstuffed, with quilts, with books, with sewing machines and comfortable chairs. In a way, Melissa found cozy and satisfying. So why did it suddenly feel like when Melissa sat down to sew or read, the other chairs in the room were calling out, "What about me? Who's going to use me?" The furniture had never talked to her before. Melissa wondered why it had suddenly become so needy. She knew the day would come, and so it did. The text popped up on Melissa's phone the last week of July. "Can we meet? Can you come to my house for dinner? 1217 East Liberty Street, Friday night, 7 p.m. Jim." Well, what if Friday night was bad for her? Melissa wondered. Weren't you supposed to ask first? Is Friday good for you? If not, what nights work next week? As it so happened, Friday night at 7 wasn't bad for Melissa. And so, at 6:40, she set out for East Liberty Street. She'd briefly thought about wearing the pink dress that made her look like she had a figure, and then wondered why she cared. She could barely remember what Jim looked like. Boyishly handsome, buttoned up. He was the anti-poet, and Melissa had no interest in anti-poets, so she wore a denim skirt and a red t-shirt. She thought about leaving the quilt at home and feigning confusion if Jim asked where it was. Quilt? What quilt? Or, "Oh, you wanted me to bring the quilt tonight? Sorry, must have gotten our signals crossed." But she knew he wanted to talk about the off-kilter quilt, and she felt duty-bound to bring it with her. Her hope was that she could talk him into letting her hold on to it for a little longer. Maybe she'd claim to be writing her master's thesis on it. She'd get it back to him in a year, or a decade, or two. The address on East Liberty Street turned out to be a small yellow cottage tucked back into a lot that sported a dozen tomato plants, a sprawling collection of zucchini and yellow squash, and a pumpkin vine that encompassed the yard's front borders and boasted one humongous pumpkin. "I'm growing her for the county fair," Jim told Melissa when he walked out on his porch and found her ogling the massive squash. "Every year I give it a try, but I haven't won yet. 2 years ago, I got third place." "That's an interesting hobby," Melissa said. "Unusual, but interesting." Jim shrugged. I spend all day with numbers, so it's fun to come home and do something, well, dumb. Mindless, I guess." "Mindless can be good," Melissa agreed. "Or wordless. It's one of the things I like about making quilts. Sometimes even a librarian needs to get away from words." Jim seemed to think about this for a moment. "I wonder what pumpkin farmers do to get away from pumpkins." Melissa looked at him and cocked her head. "You're funny, aren't you?" He stared at her blankly. "Funny, ha-ha, or funny, strange?"
"Both?"
"I think that's a fair assessment," Jim said. "You want to come in and eat something? I'm making spaghetti with fresh tomatoes. And bruschetta, also made with fresh tomatoes. And I have a bag of tomatoes for you to take home with you. So I hope you like tomatoes." Funny, ha-ha, or funny, strange? Who could tell? "So I brought back the quilt," Melissa said as she crossed the threshold into Jim's living room. "But I'd be happy to hold on to it a little longer if you don't want it cluttering up your space." Jim didn't answer. He turned on a lamp next to the couch and another one next to a comfortable-looking leather recliner. "Can I get you something to drink? Water? Beer? Glass of wine?" "Wine would be nice," Melissa said. "Red, if you have it." After Jim left to get her drink, Melissa made a tour of the living room. What kind of books would a pumpkin-growing, quilt-obsessed, tomato-rich accountant stock his shelves with? Founding father biographies? Agatha Christie mysteries? Anthropology? Archaeology? Economics? "It's mostly poetry," Jim said, returning with two glasses of wine. "I started out college as an English major." "That was quick," Melissa said, taking a glass of wine. "I'd just begun my snooping." "I already had the wine poured, just to be on the safe side. In case I'd come in waving a pistol and demanding a glass of Cabernet?" "This is Merlot," Jim said, handing Melissa a glass. "Are you going to shoot me?" Melissa shrugged. "No gun. You get to live another day." "So, an English major, huh?" "Yeah, I thought I was going to be a writer." Jim sat down on the couch and kicked his feet up on the coffee table. "Or else a sports broadcaster. But it turns out that what I'm really good at is adding up numbers." Melissa examined his shelves. There was a lot of poetry, as well as several volumes of sports writing by poets and other literary types. He also had an impressive collection of books about Buddhism. On the table by the recliner, she found a pile of quilt history books. "You really are obsessed," she said, picking up a copy of Quilts in America. "This is a classic." "My mother died when I was 10, and my grandmother raised me," Jim said. "My father didn't have the bandwidth to take care of a little boy. He gave my grandmother legal guardianship so she could make all the decisions about school and doctors and that kind of stuff." Is this her book? Melissa asked, confused as to what Jim's point might be.
No, but it's a book she would have liked. She really loved quilts.
Jim stared straight ahead, as though he could see through the wall of the house, beyond the tomatoes and the pumpkin vine, straight into the past that held his grandmother and her quilts and the abandoned boy that he once was. Somehow, watching him, Melissa knew that his grandmother's death had been recent and that Jim Burke was still grieving.
"Tell me about the log cabin quilt," she said gently. "It's a beauty. Did your grandmother make it?"
Jim shook his head. "She found it at a flea market and fell in love with it."
"This one's for your wedding bed, Jim," she said when she brought it home. "But when I got married, my wife didn't want it on our bed. She didn't like old things."
"Your wife?"
Melissa fell back into the recliner, nearly dropping her wine glass.
"You're married?"
"Was married," Jim corrected her. "Not for long. 3 years into it, my ex-wife, decided she wanted to go to seminary to become a Presbyterian minister. And I couldn't do it."
"Couldn't do what?"
"Live that life. My dad was a minister, and his job pretty much consumed him. He tried to be a good father, but he didn't have time. That's why he handed me over to my grandmother."
Melissa felt dizzy.
"So when you talked about visiting a friend at the seminary in Louisville..."
"That was my ex-wife. She asked me to do some counseling with her, sort of a closure thing. It took me 2 weeks to recover."
"Are you hungry yet? Because I've got the water boiling and the bruschetta in the oven, so all I need to do is throw in the pasta and chop up a few tomatoes."
"Sure," Melissa said, "but I'd like to talk more about that quilt."
And your ex-wife, she thought. And all those books on Buddhism. Who ever heard of a Buddhist accountant?
And then the thought struck her. She'd been sleeping underneath Jim Burke's wedding quilt.
She wondered if he'd ever slept beneath it. And if so, had his dreams been wonderful too?
"I was hoping you could tell me something about the quilt," Jim said, as they went into the kitchen. "It seems different from the other ones. Fewer straight lines, for one thing."
"Does that bother you?" Melissa asked, taking a seat on a bar stool by the kitchen island.
"As an accountant, I mean."
"Accountancy's just math, and there are all sorts of curves in math. I could tell you a thing or two about curves. But right now, I'm interested in the curves in this quilt."
"Well, the curves in your quilt strike me as improvised, which is to say the quilter cut her fabric without rulers, letting the spirit move her. She clearly wasn't using a pattern, but she was inspired by the classic log cabin design. And she most likely used the fabrics available to her, probably from worn-out clothes or scraps from the clothes she'd sewn."
"Which explains the different kinds of material," Jim said. He threw several handfuls of rotini into a pot of boiling water and then looked at Melissa.
"I wonder what her name was."
Melissa didn't reply. It was such a marvelous, unexpected thing for an accountant to wonder. For anyone to wonder, really. It was almost as if Jim Burke were a poet. A poet accountant. Could such an animal actually exist?
"My grandmother's name was Alice," Jim continued after a moment. "When my father dropped me off at her house, he said, 'You're going to live with Alice in Wonderland.'"
"Was it?" Melissa asked.
"A wonderland, I mean."
"In its way," Jim said, peering into the oven. "My garden out front is nothing compared to hers. I think I'm going to give this bruschetta another minute."
"How old were you when you went to live with her?"
10, Jim said. He turned to the stove to stir the pasta. 10 is a good age for gardening. You're interested in watching plants grow,
the science of it, right? But you're also still a believer.
In?
Magic, hobbits, talking rabbits, passageways to fantastical lands.
Melissa thought about Casey making her own magic in the garden.
Just this morning, they'd made a list for fall plantings. Brussels sprouts and carrots. Purple cabbage.
I still have my 10-year-old gardener, she told Jim. She's completely reinvented my backyard.
Jim grabbed a purple tomato and placed it firmly on the cutting board.
Melissa watched in fascination as he expertly diced it into a pile of tiny, juicy cubes.
When he finished, he looked up at her and said, I've been thinking about it. You should adopt her.
Melissa could feel her eyes widen as though she were a cartoon version of herself.
I'm sorry? You think I should what? Adopt her?
But she has a mother.
Not really. Not if she spends all day in your backyard.
She has a mother, Melissa repeated, and she doesn't spend all day in my backyard. She spends a lot of her day in the library reading.
In the library where you work?
Melissa nodded. That's where we met. She likes to read.
And garden, Jim added, julienning a twist of basil leaves. She has a mother.
You could be her guardian, Jim said. Then she could stay with you. You could teach her how to make quilts.
Who was this man?
Just who did he think he was?
You're being ridiculous, and I think I should go, Melissa said, standing. She could feel the heat in her face. She wanted to hit something. She wanted to hit Jim Burke. How dare he? How dare he do whatever it was he was doing?
I think we should have dinner and then sit on the porch and admire my pumpkin, Jim said.
We could talk more about quilts and about why my idea isn't ridiculous. If it were ridiculous, you wouldn't be so mad right now.
Melissa tried to think of something to say, something cutting and sarcastic that would bring this conversation to an end.
You don't know what...
What I'm talking about?
Jim poured some more wine into Melissa's glass and motioned for her to sit down.
As a former motherless 10-year-old who got to live in a wonderland for a while, I'd say that I do. But we can talk about it, and then you can tell me what you dreamed about when you slept under the quilt.
Me? I had a dream about a librarian with a pointed nose who was kind to children. And the next day, I met your mother at a wedding, and she told me about you.
Melissa sat down. She took a long sip of her wine.
Glancing out the window, she could see bumblebees bobbing among the pumpkin vine's enormous leaves.
Did you think she was pretty?
Who? Your mother?
No, the librarian in your dream.
Jim nodded. I thought she was beautiful.
I guess I could eat something, Melissa said, but only if there are tomatoes involved.
It's really too bad I'm allergic, Jim said, peeling a clove of garlic.
Funny ha-ha? Melissa asked, leaning forward to pluck a slice of tomato off the cutting board.
Jim didn't answer.
Melissa watched in fascination as he minced the garlic into a tiny mound and then neatly pushed it off his knife into the bowl with the tomato and basil.
Who would have ever thought that right here in Milton Falls she'd meet a quilt-obsessed Buddhist poet accountant who, on top of everything else, could cook?
Care for some bruschetta? Jim asked as he pulled a tray from the oven, the kitchen filling with the rich perfume of basil and garlic. Without waiting for a reply, he slipped two slices on a small plate and handed it to Melissa.
Sweets for the sweet, he said. I think you mean savories for the savory, Melissa said, and then flushed. Not that I'm savory. Maybe a little savory, Jim said. Okay, maybe a little, Melissa said, biting into the bruschetta. Oh, my goodness, this is wonderful. Thanks. That makes two of you. Melissa stared at Jim for a moment and then started to laugh. Funny ha-ha. Or maybe funny strange. She could see it was going to take her a while to figure it out. But that was okay. She had all the time in the world.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.